summarize what we've learned in the last couple of shiurim. The on the question of tefillin, summarized, we saw that the major, although theoretically, there is no reason why women should be able to put on tefillin like any other mitzvah to say shas not tefillin. And in fact, there is precedent for it in Jewish law. Starting with the 1300s and down through the modern period, there's been a general attempt by the rabbinic establishment to strongly dissuade women from putting on tefillin. And the fundamental reason is, as now, as I'd say, accepted in the modern generation, the way the consensus opinion seems to be, that since we tefillin is different than other mitzvot. It's not like kissing a sefer Torah or even holding a sefer Torah. It's becoming one with the sefer Torah. It's wearing a sefer Torah. And therefore, there are rules by tefillin that don't apply to anything else. There's a special rule called guf naki. Your body has to be clean, not to pass gas. Not to have to move your bowels. Not to have, and you can't have distracting thoughts. You can't even have what's called Pesach Hadat. You have to be aware that you're wearing tefillin. There's got to be a conscious connection with the tefillin at all times. And this is unique to tefillin. And because of this special quality level of Kedusha which tefillin requires, the halacha limited men's wearing tefillin to the absolute minimum. They're obligated, and therefore they wear it only for shachar. There are those who extend a little bit further, maybe they weren't beyond chakras. But again, as a general rule, it's written in Shulchan Aruch, we wear tefillin only for men who wear tefillin only for chakras, and Tisha B'Av, they wear it only for mincha, but wear it for one time frame of the dam. Women who are not obligated say, why? You can't be machmir on yourself, because being machmir, you're being essentially makel in the Kedusha of tefillin. So you think of being machmir on one hand, but you're actually being makel on another. And therefore, we will be nochem. We will object. We will take an activist stand against you wearing tefillin. Yes?
You said that you have to be absolutely clean in your thoughts also.
Yes,
is
correct.
There a moment or two or more for a man? I mean, he's commanded that he concentrates and he puts
Part of the problem is that any ritual that you do repetitively, you lose the excitement of the moment. There's a beautiful vort which I've used on many, many occasions, which is, Dr. Melot says, Achat she'avdi meit Hashem ota avakesh, shifti beveit Hashem, kol yimei chayai, lachzot benoam Hashem levakadech alon. One thing I want, he says, is to sit in the temple all the days of my life, to enjoy the splendor, and to visit the joy of the splendor, and visit in his temple. So what do you mean? You want to be there all the time?
Is it in
the vakir be'echalo, and to visit in his holy place. So the question is, you're going to be the shifti beit Hashem chayim mechaya, what is the vakir? So they answer, I want to have my cake and eat it. I want to be there the whole time, but I want to have the excitement of the joys. That's what the want. And what happens is, if you're there all the time, if you're doing the regular, you lose that excitement. The Chazal say it a different way. They say that today you're getting the Torah. So what are you getting to the Torah? You got the Torah 40 years ago. You should feel the excitement that you just got it today. There's a need somehow to keep it alive, keep it rejuvenated. And as a result, if you ask me, when I put on tefillin in the morning, do I feel this tremendous rush of Kedusha? The answer is no. Because I'm so uncomfortable. If I come to Minyan, I'm always running in late. I'm always putting on my tefillin and then I get it out fast. No, I don't. I don't. And it's not good. But I don't think you can have that excitement all the time. I don't, there's also an element of feeling that there's a quality of feeling comfortable with doing the mitzvah. But the fact of the matter is, that's a part of the point. The part of the point is that with men, because we feel this generation situation is not up to rank from the way it should, the chayitz, we do it in a limited fashion, and that's it. Women, they're not obligates, so we dissuade them from doing it. Yeah.
That brings me very interesting, like you say. And I say in the morning, I say all the brachot and the shachar and the shumai and everything, up to the... And my husband, bless his heart, he loves to listen. You like to listen, and the English daughter or other people. He can, from morning to night, listen to Chazal Utoro. So I tell him, I am very sorry to you. No, you will turn it off. But what does it bother you? I said, because I also love music. And then I say, I am listening to eine kleine Nachtmusik from Mozart. I cannot daven because I would like to concentrate. And you see, it may be very private, but it is really very human.
No. The fact of the matter is that...
I don't want to daven on the rhythm of eine kleine Nachtmusik.
The truth of the matter is, when the poskim discuss about talking during davening, well, there are many people who have the custom, they finish their Spanish letters, so they start talking to their neighbor. And I have a lot to daven for, and I try to daven with Kabbalah. And when people are next to me are talking, it's very difficult. Yeah. I had to spend most of my time with Spanish letters this way.
The music
very
disturbs my Kabbalah.
Okay, I understand it. Yes?
Would you tell
the
kind of
gen
they were?
They were.
They were.
They were very tiny children. And how did they do it? I don't know. I wasn't around then. I don't know. But you see that the Gemara already talks about this issue, and it talks about the Mufnaki, and it talks about the various issues.
Look,
so what? Does that mean they weren't proven on God because they were a hole in the soil? I don't know. I don't know. Look, I know that the Tanoim were able to do great many things that we can't imagine ourselves doing. I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that question is. And this is part of my faith commitment to Halacha, that this is how the Halacha presents the situation. And I'm now transmitting it to you the way I see it. You've read the sources yourself. Okay, that's as far as fullness is concerned. By the way, I want to make it clear that this is not a male-female issue. According to the way the halakha understands it, as chiyuv non-chiyuv, as I pointed out, that in other situations where a male might be obligated, might be free, he's not allowed to be machmer. So according to this, he really can't be machmer. All right, let's move on. Let's talk now about, yes.
The fact that someone must have dealt with it all through the years and there wasn't this gap like the kids and the does that mean that all these women agitated to their children? Because usually, I mean, it said that there were never Shupat written on hypothetical issues. You know, usually if someone was writing Shupat because there was a question.
As we point out, Philin is the source for Mitzvah Seishasim. We started off that we made that point, and therefore in every discussion, Mitzvah Seishas Mangrama starts with Philin. And Philin's a problem, because every other Mitzvah Seishas Mangrama she can do, and Philin she can't do. So that comes up in the discussion of the, you know, when they get into the, what's called getting into the Sukkia, and they're talking about Mitzvah, they start off with Philin, and then Philin leads off to its own direction. But we're going to spend next week, I think, reading some history. I'm going to take you through the history of women who weren't eligible, who they were, and you'll see that it's 10-1 that the word census is left out. That there were women who weren't filled in, but you can count them on the fingers of one. Well, census, talis, much, much more. All right. Now, so when it came to census, the poskim are much more lenient. The major argument against it was yuhara, showing off. Why was it considered showing off? Well, one reason given for showing off is because even men really don't have to wear tzitzis. There's no obligation to tell us where the tzitzis it says. If you have a four-cornered garment, then you put tzitzis, but you don't have a four-cornered garment, you don't have to wear tzitzis. There's no obligatory. It's not a mitzvah chiyuvi. It's not a mitzvah that you gotta go around and do it, right? It's not like you gotta put a mezuzah on your house and you gotta. These are not things, or you have to light, you have to mitzvah drabon, like lighting Hanukkah candles or Shabbat. These are not mitzvah that you have to do. This is it. You have a four corner garment. You can spend your whole life and never be obligated. Where is this? So therefore, for a woman to go ahead and, you know, get a four-cornered garment, which she's not obligated to wear, and then put tzitzis on it, she's sort of really be machmer, because even men don't have to do that. So that was considered showing off, and the Aruch HaShulchan gives a second argument why it's showing off, because tzitzis is a mitzvah tzmidit. She should be wearing tzitzis all the time. You know, lulav v'nesu ha'goraych, she doesn't want, so it's not showing off. She wants to do the mitzvah. Let her shake her lulav v'nesu, let her sit in the sukkah for a short period of time. But tzitzis is a mitzvah that's done on a continuous, but day in and day out, and she'll be doing it on a regular basis. That is a one-shot thing. She says, that's you alone. Now, what's the response of the rabbinic establishment to a woman who wants to show off? She wants to wear the do herself. See, if it's gufnaki, there's a clear violation. You're treading on problematic soil. The halacha says you have to have a gufnaki, and we're not letting the mahmer. But you're a rosa, so they don't. You know, a lot of people, you're not supposed to say lashon hara, and a lot of people say lashon hara, right? A lot of people, you're not supposed to show off, a lot of people show off. So, you know, we don't consider you, it's not
a real life lashon hara.
It's a real no-no, but we don't go around, the
Bezdin
doesn't go around saying,
Bezdin doesn't go around saying, only cause
a lot of people, all right, maybe you're correct, but what I'm trying to give you is, ethical violations are not the type of thing that the Bezdin goes around and says, you know, you really should stop doing. Right? Okay, and... Okay, it should, but it doesn't. No, okay, but I'm not okay. But I don't mean ethical. I mean in a business ethics sense or a medical. I mean about ethics and sense. You know, you should really be more modest. You shouldn't wear such flashy clothing. You shouldn't. People who have you abroad, irrespective, are not. The community doesn't come down on them. The sort of tolerates them. You know, you live. So the question is, what was the rabbinic established to a woman who decides you come to show and put on the top? And if you read the language of the Ramah, which we read last week, the Ramah says she shouldn't do it. She shouldn't do it because it's showing off. The Aruch HaShulchan, however, says we don't let her do it. The Aruch HaShulchan does have seems to imply, Reb Epstein understands, what does it mean, the Ramah mean she shouldn't do it? It means we don't let her do it. And that's how he understands it, as that we object and we're moche. The court has a right to criticize and chastise. You have to understand what that means. If somebody walks into shul, if a woman would walk into shul, according to the law of the book, and put on a talis as a snushin, right? According to the Aruch HaShulchan, the gabbai should go over it. Now listen, you know, really, you don't approve.
He's still at this.
Yeah. And of course, someone just already assumed that I had invited her for lunch. That's the reputation I had. Somebody said, oh, you invited her for lunch, right? Oh, yeah. Anyway, so that
somebody actually did that.
No. Well, actually put on a towel?
No, I mean, someone walked in with a towel,
and
somebody had actually
walked in.
Sure.
I don't know if somebody's guessing. You're the worst if they don't say what it is. But anyway, I'm going to say.
Somebody had a guess, and she
wore a towel. Yes. Now, listen. We'll talk about this. Now, the fact of the matter is, let me set the record straight, she was not my guest.
But if all the women were...
But she could have!
But if all the women were...
Ah, excellent question. The question is, what happens if all the women were involved?
Ah, wow.
Excellent question. But, now we're getting really feministic, but we'll talk about that. But I want to make the point, though, that... According to the Ramah says she shouldn't do it. She's standing out, and she looks like showing off, and she shouldn't do it. All right, Now, and the Aruch HaShulchan says, no, we do object. Okay, now I want to read, I'd like to read a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Okay, this tshuva was written in 1976. When did the women's, you know, dates? 1972 is the, or 1971 is the first women, Orthodox Women and Feminism Conference. Jewish Women and Feminism Conference in 1971. That's where women are already beginning to organize in some sort of fashion. It was a Jew feminist conference. It wasn't necessarily halachic feminist conference. The halachic women organizing occurs in the 90s. Okay? That's when the first halachic feminism conference occurs, is in the 90s. I went to the third conference already, I think they had. Now, but this is in the early 1970s. Feminism has already reached the halakhic community. It's beginning to make waves. And one of the places that it always occurs is in college towns. Right? College towns are away from there's a very little social pressure, they're away from their parents, they flex their muscles anyway. And who's on the front lines? On the front lines in Boston is Rabbi Kellermer, right? The young Israel of Brookline. And he's getting pounced upon, you know, these women. So actually the question that came to him was about women's hakafos. He came to Rav Moshe Feinstein to ask about women having hakafot. He also came to Rav Soloveitchik. Anyway, let's read this tshuva, okay? Now, the tshuva is very interesting. I mean, it's a fascinating tshuva, which I like to read just because of its the context of it. Maybe we should have read it earlier, but in the course of the tshuva, he deals with Talos and Tfilin, Rav Moshe. V'inyan ha-tnua chadasha shel nashim ha-sha'ananot v'ha-chashuvot. I'm sorry. Siman Mem Tet. Okay, right, so Siman Mem Tet. Okay. Anyone know what Sha'ananot is? This seems very strange, right? What does Rav Moshe mean? Chashuvot, I understand. Sha'ananot. Sha'ananot means secure.
Peaceful.
I don't think Rav Moshe means peaceful. I think it means proud, self-pride. Not proud in the sense of showing off, you know.
Self-confidence.
Proud. Shananim, secure. Self-assuredness. Self-assuredness. And, you know, important subject. Feminists. That's what I'm trying to say it nicely. Okay, these are self-assured, important women. You're saying it nicely.
What?
Rav Moshe is attempting to communicate that he respects it. That he's not waving his hand in feminism. He is waving his hand at the motivations, at the goal. We'll see. Let's read what he says. But the women themselves he respects. Okay. Malek folk ididi haravagon Maureen Kellermer Schlitter, Rab of Boston, Bekila Chashivach, that's in Israel, Boston. Hinei b'dvar anashim, ha-shananot. You should be asking, why did he ask for Moshe? Why didn't he ask the Rav? The Rav wasn't so much, so he did ask the Rav. The Rav told him, go ask for Moshe.
Because he has to live with them.
No, but Rav Moshe, Rav Soloveitchik, he asked for Soloveitchik right away. Then he said, go ask your Rebbe. I think he's from MTJ. He asked them to ask Rav Moshe. Hinei b'dvar ha'nashim ha'shananot v'chashuvot asher b'inyanei hanagot ha'mdinot v'olam. Okay, these secure and important women in matters of world political matters. Hanagot ha'mdinot v'olam hen gam kein me'alachamot. They also fight yachad im hatnua kazo, in an organization like it, im nashim alachamot b'zeh mikol amim shebolam. So this is an international effort, you say. that they're part of an organization which is linked up with other organizations who are in the same battle for women's rights. Aber nashim einu shehen shomrot Torah. These are religious women, he says. They're linked up with other women, but they're religious women. Rotzot lachnis milchamtam gam b'mash nogeh l'kam medinei Torah. They want to have their battle, they want to push for their struggle, okay, also in matters that relate to Torah. V'yesh men asher mitpalalot b'talit, chadomah, there's some of them who try to make the issue through davening with the talit, chadomah b'odvam, and similarly in other matters. The rotzeh sh'abir b'zeh dati, b'etzem ha'devah. He wants to know what my opinion is in this matter. V'ech sh'id me'ech. From God himself, Baal Sinai, Ayide Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Shalom Via Moshe Rabbeinu. V'yeh shal ha-shalot afilu kos echad lo lakir v'lo lachmer. Can I change one title? Either for to be lenient or to be strict.
Can I ask why
the Baal
is putting that when he's writing to the temple? And it is not like the Baal may allow the book
of
the
exact same advantage. It's a suggestion to continue. The answer is that this is a tshuva. He's using Kelemer as a vehicle for getting this point. This is one of the most quoted Shuvot on feminism. Because you'll see that Moshe is tough but sensitive. Watch the language carefully. He has not yet attacked feminism per se. He's not. Many posts will say, you know, he doesn't do that. He's respectful of the women. And he says, let's keep reading. Ach nitztaveinu. So he starts off, he says, you have to understand that Torah is eternal, right? And you can't change Torah. Ach nitztaveinu shekishyesh tzorech l'sayegu l'gadeh. When there's a matter to put a boundary around Torah, hayachiyuv ala sanhedrin v'chachmei Torah, there's an obligation of the Sanhedrin and the scholars of the generation, l'taken eizu takano, to set up certain institutions, l'esor eizu dvarim, to forbid certain matters, v'chein l'chayev eizu dvarim, also to obligate certain matters, ach b'hoda'a mirabbanan shu l'takana l'sad, but they have to notify the people that this is only drabbanan, that this is a takana. They have to know that this is not good. Now, by the way, this is a major machloket between the Rambam and the Raya, whether the rabbis institute stuff that has to be clear that it's within. The Rambam says if you don't, it's a problem of Baal Tosef, right? To the Torah. You really need the people to think it's no biblical institution. And the Raya says it. So the rabbis don't, the rabbis know, but the people, you don't have to notify the people, you just tell them it's Osrael. It's a fundamental machloket and it goes down all the way down to the Chafetz Machloket, down to the 1800s, between the Chafetz Chaim, not the Chafetz Chaim, between the Chassam Sofer and the Moritz Chayot, about asking all sorts of things and all sorts of institutions. The Chassam Sofer says, tell them it's Asr with the Raisa, you know, it's only custom. So they'll do it. And the Chassam Sofer says, you can't do that. And it's a very fundamental Machloket, what authorities rabbis have in even hiding the source of their prohibitions. But the Moshe clearly holds here that you have to, it can't lie. You gotta make it straight that this is only a takana. Umizman shenitpazarnu b'chol ha'ratzot, when we spread out throughout the diaspora, let lanu koach, we have no power. Let lanu koach, we don't have the power to make new takanot. Ela shiyesh lechachamim letaken kol makom u'makom, and every location, eizu takana rak l'mkomam v'rak l'zman katzar. Every rabbi in his community can forbid something, but he says, you know, it's not like when Chazal come up and make a takana. Kana, that you can't marry your grandma, I don't know, some second relative.
You can, but you can't.
You know, now there's certain relatives that you can't marry. The rabbis and students were bound by it. That's asur b'drabana. Nowadays we don't have that power. A rabbi can just say, I don't want you to act this way, I don't want you to do that. But that's only for his location, and it's only for a particular period of time. וממילא, זה שהתורה פתרה ממצוות עשה שהזמן גמר. The fact that the Torah freed women from ties and commandments which are the time determined, who min ha-Torah? That's biblical. You have to understand why that's so. Why does he have to start off with that? Because that is what makes the difference between men and women. It's the mitzvah asay shehazman gramah. Right? Now, I must tell you that my brother Dov and I were at Machon Hartman talking about our paper on women's prayer groups. And this issue came up time and time again where the feeling was that this is rabbinic. You know, this is the rabbis' institution. That's why the Moshe Feinstein is going to such great length to say, no. This is Dolaita. This is God made this distinction. That which the Torah freed women, means that that says shazman gama. Who mina Torah? The past commandments for the time determined are the women were freed by the Torah. The gamar abanan lochivum, and the rabbis too, did not obligate women positive commandments, which were time determined, except for a few exceptions, which were involved miracles. Ki lo ra'u b'zeh shum tzorich lechayma. They saw no purpose in obligating women, as a general rule. Va'adarabah, on the contrary, mashma shatzorichu lefotran, dafka me'atamim shepotran Torah. For the same reason the Torah saw fit to free women, for positive commandments to time to come, so the rabbis free women. Ulevad tamei ha-Torah shelo yadua l'stam kitshei, af lo tachachachamim v'lodim. And besides the reasons which the Torah has, which we don't understand, and even great scholars don't understand, v'anu m'chuyavim la'amin, we must believe, she'ika tamim gedolim la'kadosh baruch hu neten ha-Torah. There must be some very good reasons, great reasons why God, who gave the Torah, ika gam Torah that God had for distinguishing between men and women regarding these things. So, ika gam tamim gedolim, there are additional reasons which are obvious to all. Okay, now that's what he's trying to point out here. I mean, when we talked about the rationale between why women were free from positive commandments and why we don't, we talked about their obligation to their family. But when we analyze the reason given, we're at a higher spiritual level, etc. And each of the reasons we pointed out, there's a real fundamental problem with each of the reasons here. So Rav Moshe starts off and says, look, the reason why God freed women from positive commandments, I own that. There are reasons that we can understand. He says, but beyond that, you have to admit, we believe that God knew what he was doing when he made this decision. Now he says, now what are some of the odd, clear reasons? Kistan nashim ba'olam, because the average woman in the world, eina nashim, are not rich. Valeim mutal gidul hayoladim vayoladot, and upon them is for the burden of raising young men and women. No children. Let me just point you to something out. You know, Sir Moshe said yoladot. I want you to know he was being politically correct. This is not my mistake. Rav Moshe was being politically correct. He wants to get the message across without getting people hung up and saying, you said Yeladim, what do you mean Yeladim, not Yeladim? So he said purposely, Yeladim, and you'll see he does it all continuously. He's sensitive to it. I'm sensitive to it. They talk Gidul Yeladim Yeladot, Shi Melacha Hayoter Chashuva LaHashem Yitbarach LaTorah. He says that job is the more important of the jobs. V'chein Barah Hashem Yitbarach B'teva Kol Min U'min, that God created in the nature of each kind, of the creatures of the world, that the females of the of that particular kind raises the children. Va'afet min ha'adam lo otzi min ha'klal. And the same thing is true for the humankind. V'ze shegam teva nashim sugal yoter l'gidul yoledim. Women are more suited for raising children. Shemitzad ze hekel aleihem. And because of that, God was lenient upon them. Shalom lechayvam v'lima l'Torah. Not to require them to spend their time learning the Torah. V'lima zat asay shazman gramah. Or obligate them upon the command for the time determined. Shalachem af inishtaneh siddur chayim. So that even if the order of the world, of life, should change, ba'olam, in the world, gam l'chol ha'nashim, to all the women, u'lashirot, and or to the rich women, v'chol ha'zmanim, v'af k'she'efshar l'msor gidul l'eze inshe, if you can hand over the raising of the children to some people, inshe v'nashim, again, men, if you can hand them over to men and women, kibudin atenu, like in our, where we have daycare centers, and we have people who are willing to take care of the children. Again, notice inshi, nashi, men, women. Lo mishkane din ha-Torah v'af lo dito v'alam. The Torah law and the rabbinical did not change. V'lo t'in shum chama, no battle, ki en shum korach l'shanot, because there's no power to change. Afilu beskim kol olam kulo shum dava. You cannot change anything. Even if the whole world gets together and agrees that from now on, the men are going to raise the children, or we're going to hand all our children over to daycare centers. So it's not going to change at all. V'anashim shemitakshot v'rotsot l'lchom v'lashanot. Okay, and those who insist that they're going to change the Torah via action, they're saying that what they want to do is they're going to push the envelope. They're going to do things, and therefore the halach is going to change. והנשים שמתעקשות ורוצות ללחום ולשנות הן בחשיבות כופרות בתורה. They are, I don't understand the word חשיבות, I mean, but they are rejecting the Torah. עין ברמב"ם פרק ג' מתשובה, הלכות תשובה הלכת ח', ושלושה הן הנקראים כופרים בתורה, זה מי קונסידר רג'קטינג בתורה. Apostates, Omer, Af al Teva Achat, Shemoshe Amaro, Mipi Atzmo, because someone said that the one letter of Torah, Moshe did it himself without God, with divine approval. Vakofer, the Perusha, Shehu, Torah Shemapan, someone rejects the oral tradition as the interpretation of the Torah. Vaomer, Shehu Chlaf, Dover Echad, our sons, one mitzvah in the Torah has changed. Kol Echad, Mishloshe Elu, Kofer, the Torah, is considered. ודינם שאין על כאלה גרום בעלות ושל מילות. ואף של לשון הרמב״ם, I should point out that the Rambam was not without his detractors. There's no question of Yilvah Ibrit. But the point of that is that these are fundamentals of faith. The question is, what happens if I don't believe in them? You know, am I considered an apostate? Am I not sure they wrote a problem? That's a whole machlok and philosophical machlok between the Rambam and the Ibrim and several other people. How many Ibrim are there? How much can you reject and still not be considered apostate?
But then you say that the men is bringing up children on his own, and
he
might not be obligated.
That's not true. Yeah. No. Definitely obligated. These are gender mitzvot, and it's kids
that's the baby. So if the baby's crying, yes,
he
postpones his mitzvot.
That's a different concept. Okay. There's a concept called Osip and Mitzvah Patra Mitzvah Taru. There are all sorts of reasons, valid reasons that it works. But it works in the pinch. It doesn't work as a general rule. Women are not obligated.
Oh, okay.
He's obligated to be a tree. Yes.
I don't want to say that men can never hold a baby because sometimes they have to hold a baby. But there is an experiment. Has been made experiment in Switzerland forget about the other Switzerland. And the children in a daycare center, or I am not sure if it was a daycare center or if it was an orphanage, and they made purposely, they took children who were regularly and at length of a long time, had hold them. Yeah, and they progress in both ways, physically
and mentally much better than the children who were left lying in their graves and were looked after their physical needs and nothing else.
That's right.
They did not progress.
Yeah, but there are men who do that too. The question is, that's not a question of male thinking. Okay, let's continue on.
Isn't the female more suitable? You see, now I am saying...
Listen, Rav Moshe says yes. Rav Moshe says that women are more suitable for doing it.
It's more natural.
It might be that.
But you're saying that's what it is.
Vakofer, I'm sorry, we're moving towards about 15 lines in the bottom here. Shalashon HaRambam. Here are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It'll be the 10 lines from the bottom and the right hand column. Vashalashon HaRambam hu ha'omer shabolei kechlit mitzvah zo. Even though the Rambam states, I'm getting into a technicality, he says, even though the language of the Rambam is that someone claims that the God changed the mitzvah, right? And not that a mitzvah was changed, pashut hu shehu l'ravuta, that to say that God changed the mitzvah is even to say that God changed the mitzvah is apostasy. Certainly if someone said that the mitzvah has been changed. And pashut shehu l'ravuta, da'afa omer shabdomei yichlif mitzvah zo, because she came to Shomer, Shalashut Biyana in Shay Lachlif, even though he says that we can change it, that's right. Shigam came, Ariola Bazesh, Shayna Torah, that scriptures in the Torah is no longer eternal, irrespective of who changed it, God changed it, or man changed it. The Cholatan, who Shalay Makish, Kamak Tuvim, Anolim Shatoran, and Skip, Kirikatan, Akesavish. Okay, so he's going to say that it's claimed that by women doing the sotasechas nagama, therefore they will become obligated and therefore change halacha. He says that in effect is rejection of the fundamental.
There's something that he said in here that really bothers me. If he says that women are more suited to raising children, isn't it possible for rabbis then to turn around and endorse this by saying that men then should therefore be more respectful and more honor-bound to treat women in a less derogatory manner than has been apparent in recent times among the Haredi communities where women are shunted aside and treated rather shabbily?
But
he's saying in here that many of the decisions regarding this are rabbinic and not biblical.
He started off by saying that the woman's role, first of all, we talked about this 2.5 years ago, that women's role, that we talked about women are more suited for, women are not obligated. Because women are obligated to get married, and women are not obligated to have children, and women are not obligated to be. No, there's no such deal. Men are obligated to have children. Men are obligated to support their wives. But women are not obligated. There's no place in all of halacha that says a woman's obligated to get married. Nowhere does it say that women are obligated to have children. There's no she's not having parole. Now, we count on the fact that women will do it.
Oh, you see.
Excuse me. If a woman should say, there's no place that a woman says, I want to remain single. You can put social, but there's nothing you can do to her. I can say to her, listen, you're high, what do you mean? Don't want to come in your height. I can all of this pain and pressure. Well, that's a different situation. That's not true anymore. Halachic, but theory, you're right. You're right. That's because he says, I kept him for my mitzvah. And she agreed that when she got married, it was understood that she would help me fulfill my obligation.
Well, what if she can't?
If she can't, Then the law, the practice, a husband can divorce his wife. But nowadays, a husband can't divorce his wife against the will, and usually he doesn't want to divorce. He loves her. He doesn't want to divorce her. And the good old days, you could pick the same one. But you can't do that anymore, either.
Why don't you good old days?
Good old
Yeah.
Because I'm not so sure it's okay. Okay, now, listen, I have my problems with one boy. Okay, Ibra, let's continue. Come on. Ibra. Come on, I'd like to finish this today. Ibra. Now that was Rav Moshe hanging cuff. Now let's see which, now we're going to move into a slightly different one. Ibra, however, it's true. The Ita Veshut L'chol Isha L'chkayim Ava Mitzvot Shalokhi Banit Torah. They can fulfill any mitzvah they want to. V'yeshla Mitzvah V'sachar K'yom HaMitzvot Eno. They get mitzvah points, they get reward for doing it. V'gam L'shitat HaTasva, according to the view of the Tasva, which Yesh has a view, Rasha'ot Gam L'varecha Mitzvot. They can even make brachot, to come in again, or shema came on, it's a shofar, and you love. Okay? The gam of mevochot, okay, gam of, no, that's one possible. Okay, gam al tzitzit, a woman can make a bracha tzitzit. Al tzitzit shayach leisha she tirtze lilbosh beged shiye betzura acheret mibigde anoshi. What is he saying? So first of all, he has no objection to a woman wearing tzitzit, provided what? That it's a feminine garment. Okay. I will yeh betalat kanfa, but it'll have four corners. Well, the hatil boat tzitzit, and the kayim and tzitzit, she can do. Okay, so Rav Moshe clearly holds that if she wants to do it, she can do it. You were wrong. So you were wrong. That's her decision. But there's no objection. Rav Moshe says it's perfectly all right for her to go ahead and do it, if that's her decision. He does not understand. He clearly disagrees with what? He doesn't say. He doesn't say. He said in the con. He said Rav Moshe. No, he said. He doesn't say.
What does it say?
He doesn't make any distinction. If he meant talit katan, he would have said talit
katan.
I think he's referring to talit. He didn't say any of the magic words. He said that it's clearly to be understood that Ramosha holds there's no problem with women wearing a talit. Should you want to?
But is the talit katan just in a state of fulfilling the mitzvah of wearing tzitzit?
Yes.
So then a woman can wear tzitzit as long as it's not a talit
according
katan?
It seems that according to most poskim, a woman could wear a talit katan under a garment and there's no problem. According to everybody. Because there's no you are wrong. If it's not something that nobody sees,
that's it.
Right? If she wears it in a fashion that nobody knows, there's no problem.
In other words, it's okay for the men's tzitzit to be worn out over their pants, but for a woman to wear tzitzit over her skirt, she's not supposed to do it.
He's not saying it.
He's not getting into the process. I said to you that this, based on my analysis, understanding of you are wrong, there's no problem with talit katan, worn under the garment when nobody knows. Okay, now, the rak laniach tefillin, only when it comes to tefillin, kafu atasone avin tatzav mav, tzadi vav am alef, divon am atchil michal, et tzarek lenchot mi adam, ishu betfillin tzarek zrizut, jirubba beguf naki, you have to be very careful about guf naki, ube hasach adar, and not get distraction, shemitam zo af anashim, shemichuyobin betfillin even the men, we're obligated for the nivnaim and aniyach kol hayom, El rak zman muat the tefillat shacharit. They only wear for a minimal time. Okay. V'gam ifsik beramor chayim simon amechetziv gimel that men don't wear tefillin all the time. U'betavum Yonatan al chad lo yekli geva lisha. Now he says, what about the targum Yonatan, who says the wife that wearing tefillin is a problem of kli gever lo tilbash? Okay. So he says, u'betavum Yonatan al chad lo yekli geva lisha ita. It says, lo ye guyan de tzitzit, a bulk of tzitzit, utfilin, de gino and tikkun together, which are male accoutrements, al itah, should not be a woman. So he says, lo sviril le tosfot. So the Targum Yonatan disagrees with the tosfot. Upashut Shatoso Savrei, She'eno Mitavnan. So he says that this is not from Tavnanatan. He holds that it was added later, it's not the official text. I understand that a variety of texts are not, only the text that were guarded was the Chumash, the Tanakh. Even by the Talmud, there are serious problems with yourself, certainly with other minor book texts, like the Talmud. So he says, Tosfos holds that that was added, that was added by somebody, and it's not from the original Talmud. He disagrees. I'm a Pashut, so he's essentially saying what? Essentially saying, let me talk to you about this Talmud. It's not. Tosfos disagrees, and Tosfos holds it. When can she go ahead and put on tzitzit and do the other mitzvot? Only when she heard she thirsts to do mitzvot, which she wasn't obligated. But she's not doing it for this intention. Ella mitzad to. It should be Tal Omuta, Tal Omek.
Because they have the same level of sanctity.
See, only that the mitzvot were given them as options, while the men were obligated, but they have the same level of sanctity. The rakshu kula me'ezer tana, tana Hashem, because God saw a leniency to give the woman leniency, shebasa v'akel on Hashem. Kivalele, one guy wanted to be lenient with the woman, like we said above. Like I said above, but lo mitzad v'ri'ut ha'chash, not because women have less, unless therefore they get fewer mitzvot. U'bachiyuvin bein ish v'ishto, itach, you know, regard to a husband and relationship of a husband to his wife, a husband is obligated to respect his wife, and a wife to a husband, the lotion cook with no difference. And many women were prophets, and the same rules of prophecy is applied to men. Many things women were paid to do more than men, both in the text. And the biblical text is also in the music of the text. The Shum Zilzul Mekodam, the Chol Devar Bezeh Shemiftu Melimah Latorah Mitzvah Shazman Yitanah, the Leka Klal Shum Zivav Nekrayim Klal. It says, there's not that, not because they were less evil, they didn't fear mitzvah, and that's not a reason to complain. Zeh Yesh Lekvot Torah Harav Azbir V'chol Pam Am Liyot Takif V'chazak, and you should explain this to your congregants and be strong, the doctor in his view, shehu k'dinei Torah l'mchot ve'il ha'nashi, sh'akach ha'kol ze yamdu b'datan ha'idolet v'akusha, sh'lo l'shanot shum davar minnagei Yisrael k'osha. So these women proceed and being obstinate, he says, that then you have to fight. U'bezeg mo, etc., etc., etc. Okay.
Minhag, you put them at the end.
Yeah, he does. I'm glad you know.
In
that case, the customs of Israel, which denote over time now. Judaism, there is a general sense of vox populi, vox dei, the voice of the people,
the voice of God,
which is actually is a paraphrase from Korach. God said, "V'gad v'gad kulam k'doshim," right? The Torah Hashem. That's actually. All right, so this is a very fundamental tshuva. The reason why I brought it, of course, is for the punchline that he says there's no problem with more in tzitzis, but, and he obviously is not shook up about this. You are a problem too much. Philip stands firm, and I brought you all the rest because I think it's an interesting position that we need to take. Yes?
Easier to take
the leniency,
pointing to another woman.
But if finished raising your children,
I must say that you really don't have an excuse for needing this leniency.
That's right. I mentioned that that was a fundamental criticism that I had, and since we see that that rationale works by kibbutz of A, that the Torah, the way the halakha is phrased, women are free from, as long as they. Raising children have obligations, you know, to their family. They're free if they can't. If there's a clash between, you know, respecting the doing positive things, not they can't deprecate your parents ever, but doing positive things for your family versus doing positive things for your parents, your family comes first. But at some point, that a woman becomes a Muslim widow, they're divorced, right? Then she ceases having family obligations. Okay, then she has a first obligation to her parents. That may be true, but I said if that's no longer an issue, that this ceases being to be an issue, then she is obligated. For instance, her husband says, "Go ahead, you can take me. I have no objection." Then she resumes all the possibilities. So the question you're asking me, if the whole reason why women of the Abu Draham said, the whole reason why women are free is because of their obligation to their family, therefore she'd be, so if her husband says, "I have no objection, go," then she want to shake lula, the obligation to shake lula, go ahead and shake lula. And the halakha says, no, she's free. She's still free. So while that is a good rationale, that was my criticism. That was my criticism of that position. That you see the Torah does make distinctions by people of aim. So emotion is essentially saying, God freed women from positive 99 determinism. The rest from the rest is merely rationales, some variety of rationales, which are all relevant and maybe partially true, but it's let me put it this way. Davening is down the books, which you're not obligated. But you're not obligated anything. You just daven God with the Shmones, in the Mishachas, in the Mishachas, in the Shmones, in the Mishachas, in the Shmones, in the Mishachas, in the Mishachas, in the Shmones, that's all. So, but if you feel guilty, you should.
Getting better at it.
What, getting better at not feeling guilty? Okay, we have like another 10 minutes. What we're going to do now is we're going to move into this issue. Now we're moving into the 1990s. This is 1970s. Now we're in the 1990s. Okay, we now are going to start reading, okay, some opinions that were written to the Supreme Court of the State of Israel on the Women at the Wall. Okay, let me just give you a little bit on Women at the Wall. Women of the Wall, okay, Women of the Wall. Are a group of women who essentially, let's see, most women's prayer groups are affiliated with what's called, Women's Tefillah Network. The Women of the Wall are not. They are Women's Tefillah Network are made up of women who are, officially declare themselves as Orthodox women who are bound by halacha. It's not that it's halacha the way I see it, but at least they have poskim, they discuss it, they have rabbis, they work within the sources. Okay, a woman of the wall is a pluralistic. It's a group of Orthodox, conservative, or women who come to pray at the wall.
Together?
What?
You mean like a group or just
a group? They come, they meet, usually on Rosh Chodesh, or they meet some other time. They come and they pray at the wall at the Kotel. They come with a Sefer Torah, they come with none of them were in Tavitot. And as you're aware, they caused quite a stir. And it came to the Supreme Court of the State of Israel about that it was an infringement upon the minhag of the Kotel to do such things. So there was a whole question of important decision. I don't know exactly what stands now, but you know, that they were told they could come from some wall, not from the eastern wall, because most people by the eastern wall, they insist they want to be by the western wall, by the Kotel Maravi. I don't think that it's essentially resolved, and the non-commission was supposed to, amongst many... What? Bottom line is nothing's been decided yet. They still come. I don't know exactly, since I hadn't seen them in action recently, I don't know whether they come or come both. I think they still come, I don't know if they do it the same time. I know they do them together, I don't know, I think for the time being they don't come at the same time. I don't know.
What was the commotion about? What was the commotion about?
You're so literate, you don't even see the problem?
No, I don't see the problem.
No, you see the halakhic or you don't see the social problem?
I don't see either problem.
I don't understand where you stand, but you don't see that the Haredim threw chairs and stuff like that.
The Haredim have a problem. I don't see why they have a problem, except that they're very...
Well, women wearing talitot is still not that common. and women bringing from the Sefer Torah.
They're on
their
other women serving in Israel.
They're
not anywhere near those people.
Who told you it was the Haredi men?
What are you calling?
The women, I must say, the women are as vocal as the men. The truth of the matter is the Haredi men did. Of course, how did the men know that we're doing it? That's because they came, and some of them they came to photographers, they were on press conference. Part of the problem with the Women of the Wall is that it's religious politics. It's an attempt to liberate the wall. But some of them, their feeling, they claim that if they didn't come with protection, that they would have been able to do what they wanted. not very different than you know, there are groups of, and I've seen it, I was at the Kotel, there was a group of Reformed Jews who came, and they didn't even go by the Kotel, they were on the Rachava, towards the back, they got together to daven. And the Chavadim were howling at them, bottles of water at them. Never confuse a Jew with halacha or Hashem or these things.
The problem is, the
your fundamental problem is that you're pluralistic. A lot of people look. What I can tell you is that the majority of people who attend the Kotel on a regular basis and are always there are not this Talmud Yeshiva. They're not home. And they're there all the time. They're there all the time.
That's a very big problem, because let's say that because I live in Jerusalem, I go to the Kotel every day, I get.
No. What it says is that there is a minute in the shul called the Kotel, and you come visit that shul in which the vast. This is how the argument was based. No. Let's say the debate. Now, so they tell you. So let me now present what the arguments were. The arguments of the women voted against the Rav Kotel, against Rav Getz. The Rav Getz said, "You want to have a Sefer Torah?" He says, "I have no objection. Not by me. You want a Dharma Talisman? Fine. Not by me. This shul called the Kotel has a minhag hamakom. Right? Just as when you come into a mosque, you act as they request. So when you come to the Kotel, this minhag hamakom has, this place has a certain rules, minhag hamakom. And you have no right to, and it's in law." The women argue, this is not a shul. This is not a private organization. This shul belongs to Klal Yisrael. What are you telling me that you have a right to determine? No, the Supreme Court of the State of Israel has a right to determine what is equitable, what isn't equitable. Everybody should have their little arba amos to daven the way they want to. We don't want the whole code. Don't give me a little piece. And that's what the Reform movement is arguing the same thing. They're like the women at the Kotel. I don't think it's been resolved yet, but. The part of the problem is that the Haredim use as Yerushalayim Yalom, and there's a problem of how much Kodesh Kodashim you would throw into it. And you would have some war against you. It's not trivial. You need a lot of fun. And this is, in any case, this is the legal battle. On the one hand, you say it's a Beit Knesset with Minhag HaMakom, and you have to follow the event. And this is not started in 1948. This is with the Minhag HaMakom from the early 1900s. For whatever Jews daven, that's the way the Jews daven. That's because the Turks didn't allow them, but they claim they daven as individuals. You didn't even have a meaning yet. The whole question about how they daven in the Turkish time, they hop together a little bit of day. But it was a fundamental problem. They got huddled together. It was a showing to you if you're caught, you're going to prison. And so the keys went away from blowing shofar. It was difficult. The church is great. I don't know. I can imagine. They did that one separately.
It was a lot smaller.
It was very, very small.
Very much.
You're right. I mean, there is a mixture of motivations here, and it's a very mixed group. These are women. There are women who say, "I want to do this act, which I believe is halachically perfectly okay at the cult of the holy place, so that the communities that we can get to." And they want to do others. And others know have an agenda. Look. It is a mixed group. It's a very mixed group. Orthodox and German Reform. It's not.
And people
still
must be that I have
a spiritual experience.
Come on.
Yes, I must admit it.
Come on. You could say that you could say something like that, and someone could say, "Formal who wants to down with."
If you want to have a spiritual experience, if you want to down with Kavan, you've got to be open to that. You don't go down with Kavan. No, not. You don't govern the Kota where there are cops all around and people are howling and screaming at you and you're all crushed together to protect the Sefer Torah because they're throwing water at you. That's not a place to govern. You can't tell me you have to come from it. I'm too realistic. You're there to make a point, and they're chanting to make a point. They're not there to daven Kabbalah. I didn't say they don't want to daven Kabbalah. I don't feel that they don't get a spiritual elevation because they think that they're striking one more blow for womankind. But I do think that they're objectively, it becomes very, very difficult. I understand things have quieted down. It's like in many other things. Things get pretty much, they stay on their corner and they do their own. Anyway.
Isn't it considered, though, for
the question?
If they throw bottles in a place, if they do acts of aggression or say things that are not nice in a place that's considered holy.
Let me just try to give you an analogy that is about as bad as I can. Suppose a whole group of Christian missionaries came in with a very large cross and marched into the Kota, crossing themselves from here to tomorrow, right? And a group of Jews said, "Atkan, we're not going to do it," and they pushed them back.
Okay.
Would you view that as Chilul Hashem?
If it was violent, and if it was with, I mean, if they were throwing rocks and bottles at them, yes.
Look, a lot happens to do, they insist on being there, they refuse, and they're going to do a sacrament right there at the Kotel that's holy, they're going to do it, and they don't care what anybody says. No. I would have a serious problem. I wouldn't do it. But if somebody was saying, "Not here, you're not going to do it here," it's like putting up crosses in Auschwitz. I want you to know, it's not here. This is, there's the point, you got to stand up for being a Jew. The borderline between what you consider, I have to be civil, I have to be tolerant, I have to be pluralistic, and I got to stand up.
I'm not saying pluralistic, I'm really saying that you shouldn't. If somebody is doing something that's totally abhorrent, I mean, okay, across in the area of the hotel and some Christian missionary group's doing whatever they're doing there, okay, is considered religiously diametrically opposed to everything we believe in, but to then turn around and throw rocks and bottles at these people in a holy place, committing an act of violence is also not good.
Let me just put it this way. My sentiments are with you. I want you to know that my presentation of these Christians marching in with the cross is not very different the way the Haredim view these women marching in with the sacred
swords. Okay. Yeah.
Now a part of the problem is that we're so liberal that our, but it's not trivial. It's not trivial.
Is that hypothetically the cross?
Yes. All right, so what we're going to do, starting next week, next week we'll start with the issue. Now, one of the major issues, we're not going to learn about the woman at the Kotel. That's not the goal. One of the major issues is Europe. Women watching with the talitot at the Kotel, and we're going to see a rehash of the argument with a lot of very interesting twists. Because now it's not an individual woman wearing a talit, this is a group of women wearing talitot. And how much you weigh the euro, etc.